from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Happy football season, everybody. It is officially here. We get the start of our local, anyway, college football season tonight as KU is in action. And what should be a thrilling affair with Lindenwood. Maybe not, but we'll get you ready for the game anyway. We're pumped that it is football season. KU plays tonight. We'll have you all covered. We'll also be getting ready for K-State's opener this weekend. We will have our buddy Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider from GoPowerCat.com, on the program today to help us do that top of the next hour. We've got all sorts of good stuff coming your way today. Another significant, I think, move for the Kansas City Chiefs made yesterday to the roster. So we'll have that on tap. A very strange, but in the aftermath, series that you'd be happy about if you're a Royals fan with the Guardians. But we'll talk about the series finale there and no time to rest as you get maybe an even tougher test coming this week, starting tonight in Houston. We'll go through all of those things. We've got two giveaways for you today. Cody Jinks fans, Outlaw Country, Red Dirt Country fans, get ready for an opportunity to win some tickets to see him. And Jason Boland at Intrust Bank Arena on November 23rd. We'll give away some tickets there a little bit later. We'll give away some HTO, iced tea and coffee. So lots of fun stuff going on today for you here. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be here. Excited to get ready for the first college football game that impacts us here locally tonight. And then, of course, K-State this weekend. It's football season. Ready to go. It seems like today's like the last hot day, like really hot summer feeling like day. We'll get cooler temperatures and time for football season to kick off and the holiday weekend and all of that. So, man, I'm pumped up. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it's going to be, I wait outside with my kids for the bus and it is warm. We'll say that. Like I couldn't believe how hot it felt. So stay cool out there, everybody. I think you get a little breeze later today that should help, but yeah, it cools way off and then, you know, maybe we're a little bit back to normal. It's been a little warm, but look. Hope everybody gets some rain. Tommy, we've got all kinds of things happening. So we'll dig into it a little bit later. The Chiefs add Samaje Perine yesterday. I think that's significant. So that's the move they made yesterday. But let's start with the Royals, and we'll get to KU talk as well as we make our way through a little probably closer to the end of the show. The Royals, just throw your hands up in the air sometimes with baseball. What do we talk about coming into that series? Middle of the bullpen. You know, outside of the very back end has really let the Royals down lately. Cleveland comes in with one of the better bullpens in baseball. So, of course, you get into the series and it's the middle of the bullpen that strengthens and leads the way to the Royals taking the first three. They were in position to make it a sweep, and then the back end of the bullpen can't hold it together with a fairly large lead. Although I will say yesterday in the game where Urcig, you know, gave up the run, and all the hit, there were, I counted four plays that should have been made defensively, at minimum three. I think it was the defense that let the Royals down yesterday more than the pitching, because they could have been out of that inning no problem if they just I don't know. I don't know what was going on. The Bobby Witt Jr. play where he jumped up in the air, I thought he could have made that. I'm not going to say he should have made that one, but the two fly balls to the outfield and the ball that Freddie Freeman like hit by, those should have been plays that are made and normally probably would be. So I don't know what was going on there, but at the end of the day, they took 3 of 4 in Cleveland.
You know, that is 100% not on Lucas Ersig. And, you know,
he looked good.
He
right?
did. And there were, in fact, I think I saw a stat after the game that all four of the hits that he gave up, I think all had exit velocities under 80 miles per hour. So like they, none of them were hard hit balls. You know, they're just sometimes, you know, you hit it where they ain't. I mean, that's kind of where it is. And that's kind of what the Guardians did to get back in the game. Honestly, that whole situation. Yeah, the defense let them down in a couple of moments. But more than anything, that's just a result of the way the first three games played out. You know, Quatrero, I think in a normal situation, probably wouldn't send Michael Wacha back out to pitch the seventh because Wacha looked tired. He looked tired. But before that game, the first three games of the series, the starters had only given you 10 innings in those three games. And so the bullpen had to have been gassed. If you think Wacha was tired, and he was, the bullpen absolutely was
without
depleted.
Without a day off.
Without a day off. Exactly. Yeah. And you play a doubleheader, you know, on Monday, and then you're right back into a game on Tuesday with a quick turnaround with a day game on Wednesday. Like the bullpen absolutely was gassed. And that's why, I mean, I know that it was, you know, kind of a high leverage situation, but in an ideal world, you're not putting Lucas Ersig out there in the seventh inning. He's going to be the ninth inning guy. So that's all a result of the way the first three games in the series had played out. And honestly, I saw, you know, Matt Quatrero get some criticism online with the decision to send Michael Wacha back out in the seventh inning. And like, I don't really blame him because what other option do you have at that point?
No.
Your starter's tired, but what, I mean, your bullpen is depleted.
He made the right decision. Okay. Like, he made the right decision because Ersig should have had them out of that jam. We'll give him one run there. You know, like we'll give him one. But that, again, it wasn't the decision's fault. It was the defense not making a couple of plays' fault. Quatrero made the right decision. And it does bring up an interesting point. Where is Ersig the most valuable? Now, this isn't just this is a philosophical question as much as anything else. It's not just the Royals. Where do you use your best late inning pitcher? Do you chisel out their role into the ninth inning, or do you use them when you need them the most? There was not going to be a more high leverage spot in that game than that moment he came in the game. We're baseball guys, so we think about these things way too much, right? Casual baseball fans don't really care, probably. I think about this one all the time. I've always wondered why you don't use your best pitcher in your most vulnerable moment. Because that moment in the seventh inning, if you're going to win that game, will be the most high leverage point the rest of the way. So I like the way that Quatrero has utilized Ersig that way. Is it traditional? No, but I don't think the Royals have a traditional bullpen. And I think where I've landed on that philosophical question, because a long time ago, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Just use your best pitcher when you need them the most. I was like dead set on that. And like, that's the way to do it. But then, you know, you grow a little bit and then you think like, okay, well, the Yankees built an empire on chiseling out a seventh, eighth, and ninth inning role. And then I think back to the Texas Rangers, who I follow. They made the World Series in 2010 and 2011, largely because they could shut down seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. Then I go and I cover two World Series with the Royals, in which the strength of those teams was being able to shut down seven, eight, nine. So now these days in life, like, I see the value in that. Shortening the game, psychological warfare, all those things, I think it has value. But you got to be able to do it. And right now the Royals can't do that. They don't have a 7 and 8 to get to 9 that allows you to do that. Where essentially those teams I mentioned had 3 closers on their team. The Royals have one, and it's Ersig. And then they have a bunch of other guys that can be handy. So I do think the rest of the way, as we look at this, that is probably the best path for the Royals, to use Ersig that way. Let him be the guy that comes in when you are up against the wall. I don't care if it's the fifth inning, Tommy. I don't care what inning it is, quite frankly. if your starter is on the ropes and the other team has a chance to put you away or take a lead like they did last night, that's when Hrsic needs to come into the game. And so the decision was fine. Cotrero made the right decision. Hrsic should have gotten them out of that jam if the defense doesn't let them down and we're not having this conversation. Now, they could have blown the game a little bit later, but Hrsic would have given them multiple innings last night had he held on there. So it's an interesting thing. But yeah, they won 3 of 4. I will say this, though. I don't want to make it all roses on winning 3 of 4, even though that's fantastic. It does feel a little bit now, and this is only because of the way things played out, like a missed opportunity to not put your foot on the throat of Cleveland and really stagger them coming. I mean, the difference in being swept at home and losing 3 of 4 is a difference, especially in that fourth game when you trailed it and it sure looked like the Royals were going to get the sweep. That maybe gives Cleveland a little bit of energy to be able to come back like that. And again, we're looking way too deep.
Yeah, I disagree. I disagree with that. I mean,
but it was a missed opportunity. They could have had first place coming out of
it. But at the same time, though, going into the series, I think that most folks probably would have been at the very bare minimum content with a split. So you take the series, and sure, you don't close out the final game on getaway day to sweep them at home. And yeah, from a momentum standpoint, yeah, that's important. That's
a little
great.
Bit, maybe.
But I don't think that it's anything that will come back to hurt the Royals down the stretch, I don't think.
I mean, I guess you see if it's decided by a game.
Sure.
I'll just say this. If Cleveland came out in game four and just kind of shut you down and beat you, let's say like 5-6-0, 5-6-1, I wouldn't care about that. This one felt just a little. This one stings a little bit because you had them.
I mean,
on
you don't
the ropes.
Think getting
like
you don't think getting shut out in the finale of that series
wouldn't have
been a little bit deflating. Really? I mean, because
not like letting them come back and beat you after you had them on the ropes with your top dog on the mound.
The context is important. Context is important. I think that I know Cleveland came back and won the game. But again, you have to have the context of how they came back and won the game. And
yeah.
I know you're probably more putting it squarely on the shoulders of the defense. And there were maybe a couple of plays that they would like to have back. But some of it was fluky, honestly. Like, I don't put all of the blame on the defense. Sometimes, Cleveland, the other team just hits it where you're not. And that just happens.
Oh, I can get on board with that.
I think
fly balls to the outfield should have been
sure,
caught.
But I think it was ended up being a fluky loss for the Royals. And going back to the point about the bullpen, I want to be clear. I'm not in, disagreement with the decision to bring in Lucas Hrsic in the seventh inning. I just, in an ideal situation, that's not where Cotrero would like to use him, I don't think. So you're not in an ideal situation with the way that the series had played out prior to yesterday. And so I think that dictated a lot of it. And one thing that I've got to do as I'm looking at this team and assessing the Royals down the stretch and into the postseason, and that I think a lot of fans need to do, is forget about the way the Royals bullpen was the last time they were in this spot in 2015. Because in 2014, they had a lockdown bullpen with those roles carved out. I mean, think about guys like Greg Holland and Wade Davis, where it was automatic. If you could get the game to the bullpen, the Royals had one of, if not the best, elite lockdown bullpens in Major League Baseball, and they were a large factor in the Royals winning a championship. That is not this team. And so as we get down the stretch and as we get into potentially postseason play for the Royals, I know at least I have to constantly remind myself this is not the 2014 and 2015 right. Royals that have that kind of lockdown bullpen where you just know you can hand it over to a couple of guys and it doesn't matter who you necessarily give it to in what inning, they've got their roles carved out and they're going to lock the other team down.
It is a fascinating thing to think about. The other thing, too, real quick, on I am in no way disappointed in the series. It was tough to let him off the hook because the Royals lost Lorenzen to the 15-day IL. We haven't even mentioned that. And Reagan's left his start also injured. So all the things considered in the series, 3 out of 4 is even better. But to the Hrsic thing, it would be one thing. If Hrsic would have come out last night and got shelled, I'd say, okay, don't do that again. Hrsic was fine yesterday. He made his pitches. In fact, I thought he did an incredible job considering the circumstances. He should have got out of the inning. I think for this team, I would if I had to make a bet on it, I would bet that Cotrero keeps using him that way. 7, 8, 9 highest leverage spot. If the game's on the line and it's the 7th, 8th, or 9th inning, I think that's where we're going to see Urcic. Because the reality is, who would you rather see? They don't even have a specialist right now that you can. I mean, Long has been pretty good, right? Long has been, he's been good. We'll call it good. And then Bubic is more get you there kind of guy to me. I just don't know that they, and Schreiber's been effective, but his stuff isn't played. I mean, MacArthur is the only other guy to me, stuff wise, when you watch him pitch, that looks like, you know what, you got basically like, you got to have a strikeout here. He to me looks like the only other, he and Urcic are like the only guys that can do that. And I just don't trust him at this point. So I'm not bringing him in that kind of a spot unless I absolutely have to. I think it's Urcic. And you can just try to make your way through the clean innings after that. I think that's what they're going to do. And I think it's the right call.
I think that that's probably the direction. But I'm sure that if Matt Cotrero was being honest, he doesn't love that that's the direction that he has to take.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah, no. So, I think he wants to be traditional.
Yeah, you've got to use your best pitcher at this point without having a lot of reinforcements in that bullpen. You've got to use your best pitcher when the situation dictates it, as opposed to just a consistent ninth inning closer type role. The other thing that I think is really important to point out, you know, the Royals, you absolutely cannot overlook the 4-game set that's on tap for the Royals starting tonight and running through the weekend against the Astros on the road, by the way. But you get Cleveland again back at home for 3 more games starting on Monday. The Royals, with the taking 3 out of 4, they've already clinched the season series against Cleveland. Like it's 7-3 in the 10 games that they've gone head-to-head. So even if the Guardians sweep the Royals at home next week, probably not going to happen, but even if they do, the Royals still take the overall season series against Cleveland. So to me, again, that lends a little bit more credibility to the fact that even though they didn't get the sweep yesterday against Cleveland, you know you've clinched the season series. And so, sure, at the very end of the season, the AL Central may come down to 1 game, and you would probably wish that you had that one back yesterday. But you can't, even if the Royals get swept next week by Cleveland, you can't ask for a whole lot more. They won the series overall against the Guardians this entire season, and that's the team that they've been chasing in first place the entire year.
And Houston's not hot right now by any means. They've only won 4 out of the last 10, but I am concerned about the Houston offense against the struggling rotation for the Royals lately. I am concerned about that in that series. I think they're going to have to hit a lot, and they can. That's what, you know, that's part of what they do. We'll get more into that opener here tonight. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's go to the Chiefs next. This Samaje Perine move is really interesting. So we'll get into that. They added a talented pass catching running back. What does that mean? How impactful will that be for this team? 869-1240, the IHOP hotline is open for you. Excited to bring back It's All You Can Eat Pancakes deal through September 15th. Tim Fitzgerald will join us there in just a little bit. We've got a couple of giveaways for you. And we want to say thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for bringing us coffee each and every morning here on KFH and all the Odyssey family of stations. It's all Brockton Caster, a little Chiefs talk when we come back. Everybody, Sports Daily here on KFH. We've been talking Royals, all our baseball coverage on KFH, presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. By the way, Royals tonight, 7 o'clock against the Astros. You'll hear it right here on KFH, or you can find it for free on the Odyssey app. All right, Tommy, let's talk about this Samaje Perine move real quick, and then we'll close the hour with some KU preview here. I think this is pretty significant. If you're talking about a need, now Isaiah Pacheco fantasy owners aren't going to like this, but I think Perine slides in and probably immediately takes some third down work. He is not just a guy that can catch the ball. He's a guy that's been one of the best in football at catching the ball and being a pass catching receiver that we've seen in the league the last two or three years. Feels like a bit of a weapon here for the Chiefs. Now, I don't know. Have you seen, Tommy, a corresponding roster move yet? Because I have not.
Yeah, no, I haven't. And I know they made another trade yesterday with the Cowboys to acquire a tight end.
They made that one Hendershot. Right before cuts.
So I don't know if there was a roster move that would impact this signing.
They made that trade right before they cut the roster down to 53. So they made that trade, then they made their cuts, and they're carrying four tight ends. The Perrien trade yesterday makes me wonder if they keep Clyde Edwards-Helaire, which wouldn't make a ton of sense to me because, you know, I don't know that, like, they don't need to carry four running backs, and Carson Steele is very clearly on the roster. There's no way Perrien takes his spot. I mean, maybe they do carry four and they trim somewhere else. I just don't see the upside to carrying Clyde Edwards-Helaire now when you've got your backup to Pacheco and Carson Steele, and now Samaje Perrien can come in as a specialist for you. Maybe they'll keep four. I don't know, but I haven't seen that corresponding roster move. If anybody out there see it, let us know.
Yeah, and I think that when the roster cuts, you know, officially came down on Tuesday, and I know I wasn't on the show yesterday, and I'm sure you and Paul discussed it. When the roster cuts came down, my initial thought was, yeah, there's nobody currently on the roster at all that even would have been on the bubble to be cut that I felt like was a true threat to take a spot from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know, they had Denaric Prince. Cut him. They had Lewis Reese.
Well, Carson Steele would have been that guy.
But Carson Steele, I think it solidified a roster spot even by not needing to move Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and that's what happened. Gotcha. Like, I think that both of them, and they absolutely were, you know, not cut, but even going into it, I thought, okay, Carson Steele's on the roster, but I don't think that's going to bump out CEH. So that was kind of what I was thinking about. Was there wasn't anybody else. Three. Yeah, they needed to carry three, and there wasn't another one that I felt like could have, you know, taken over and kicked off Clyde Edwards-Helaire from the active roster. That changes when Samaje Perrien gets signed by the Chiefs. And one of the things that he brings to the table that really makes it, I think, even more of an indication that they'll potentially make a change with Clyde Edwards-Helaire is that Samaje Perrien is a pass-catching running back. He can catch passes out of the backfield. That's what he's done his entire career. So you mentioned third down, and absolutely, but he's versatile in that way. They were really looking for somebody, I think, out of the backfield to be able to do that, considering they didn't re-sign Jerick McKinnon, and Jerick McKinnon could do that sort of thing. They needed that type of running back out of the backfield to be able to also catch passes if needed. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, when he was drafted in the first round out of LSU, I distinctly remember that was the biggest selling point on him was that he is a pass-catching running back. And he's done that a little bit in his tenure in Kansas City, but not at the level that I think a lot of people were expecting him to do. So again, I think that's an indictment of how they feel about Clyde Edwards-Helaire that they go out and they sign Samaje Perrien.
I do too. That's why I'm waiting for the corresponding roster move. They need three running backs. I don't think they need four if they're going to keep Hardman and Sky Moore on the team as potential return men. Then you don't need to use that roster spot there. Clyde Edwards-Helaire isn't going to just get like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is very replaceable, and I don't mean that like offensively. He just hasn't been that good. He's not dynamic. He's not the runner Carson Steele. Carson Steele is a clone of Isaiah Pacheco, it looks like, in the way that they run. That was a revelation in training camp. Such a nice find for them. Samaje Perrien gives him another wrinkle, and he's better at what they probably had Clyde on the roster to do. He's better at it. And he's been a far more productive NFL player. I think it makes the most sense to just keep carrying through. I just haven't seen that move, but that happened yesterday. It does add a weapon to the offense. I mean, it does. Like they'll figure out a way to use Perrien, and it is a nice get for Kansas City. I'm not sure why Denver was out on him, but it's fine. I mean, it does add to the offense for Kansas. I mean, I don't think there's any question about it. That is, you know, Pacheco is fine at that. And look, Pacheco may keep developing, and they may just Perrien may just be a depth piece because they want Pacheco to catch the ball. But the reality is, we know or at least I think, Pacheco's likelihood to stay healthy for 17 games is low. But even if it's Perine slash, you know, Steele equaling Pacheco, if he misses time, you like it. It's just a move that makes a lot of sense, and it feels like it kind of fell into their lap a little bit.
Here's the other thing, too, to keep in mind. If you're comparing Perine and Edwards-Helaire over the last two seasons, first off, Perine is averaging almost a yard more per carry than Edwards-Helaire has over the span of the last couple of seasons. But in the passing game, specifically, Perine caught 88 passes for 742 yards and four touchdowns in the last 2 years. Edwards-Helaire, in the same time span, caught 34 passes for 339 yards and four touchdowns. So almost, 400 more yards in the last two seasons in receiving for Samaje Perine. And, you know, I think that what makes that even more remarkable is the fact that if you think about last season with the Chiefs, the Patrick Mahomes passing game was built on those short and intermediate passes and passes out of the backfield and things like that. So you would have thought that if there was going to be a situation for a running back on the Chiefs roster to get a good amount of yards and catches and touchdowns, it would have been last year, and it probably should have been Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but it really wasn't. And so this is definitely an upgrade in the running back room. And I don't know, again, if they're going to make a move with Clyde Edwards-Helaire or if they're going to carry four running backs or what that will look like. But if you would have told me a week ago that the Chiefs potentially would be swapping out Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Kadarius Toney for Juju Smith-Schuster and Samaje Perine, I would have taken that every single day. And those are both clear upgrades in the wide receiver room, and that may ultimately end up being where we're at for week number one.
It's a good addition. We'll see what the corresponding roster move is. I don't know when that has to happen. I haven't seen it yet. I'm sure there's a moment it has to happen, and we'll let you know if it does in the next little bit or whenever it does in the coming days. If you want to chime in on that, you can on our video streams as well. We got you, of course, on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, X. Let's set up our first giveaway, then we'll take a break, and we will come back and we'll talk some KU football tonight. Let's do Cody Jinks in the first hour today. Don't miss out on your chance to see him at Interest Bank Arena. Jason Boland is also a part of that show. It's November 23rd. All you got to do to win, you got a couple more chances this week. Text the keyword Cody, C-O-D-Y, to the short code 20357. That's Cody to 20357. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back. KU fans, here we go. It is the start of the regular season. We'll look at the bets. We'll look at expectations. All of it when we return on Sports Daily. Back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Got our Cody Jinks giveaway going here. Cody to the short code 20357. That text is the way to win those. This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club, a great place. Tommy, if you're looking for a place to go watch the game tonight, you could go catch the first half, have a beer over at Crestview if you'd like. They'll have the game on, I'm sure.
You know, that's a really good idea. I didn't even think about that. I might have to mosey on over there and enjoy the game.
Check them out. More than great golf. It is great golf, and it is about to be the greatest golfing weather. Let's talk about KU here, Tommy. Look, it's Lindenwood. It's a 45.5 point spread. I don't know what to do with these. I think I put them in, you know, one of those early season wacky parlays to cover, but who knows? Like, I have no idea what to expect in the game. We talked to Shreya Slotta yesterday about the game, and I think his two places that he really wants to watch are the offensive and defensive lines. Can they get to the place? You know, the thought is they've been maybe more athletic, more physical. They brought in the big time transfer out of A&M, all those things. So he's watching there. And then I hate to say this because we talk about it all the time. He also wants to see Jalen Daniels play through and be able to stay healthy this year. And it is a big question for him on KU. I mean, it will be nice. I don't want to see Jalen Daniels get hit, but you kind of want to see Jalen Daniels get hit. You know what I mean? Like, be able to just bounce right up, run around a little bit, see if they, you know, throttle him at all. It'll be kind of hard to tell in this game, though, Tommy, won't it? Like, you don't want to just dump it all out for Lindenwood in normal circumstances. But in this specific circumstance with a guy who hadn't been able to play for a while, you do kind of want to see him cut it loose and go full steam ahead. I don't know what their plan on that will be. That will be interesting to watch.
I'm less interested in Jalen Daniels cutting it loose, and not that I'm not interested. I know he can do it, and so I don't have a question in my mind about whether or not he can or will do that tonight. More than anything, it's more holistically with the offense for Kansas, because we haven't really talked about this at all, and it's really been fairly quiet about this particular this particular situation for the last several months. This is the first game that the Jayhawks have without Andy Kotelnicki as offensive coordinator. And
we talk about K-State all the time and Colin Klein. You're
absolutely
right.
And Andy Kotelnicki is no longer with the program. And so will we see a different looking KU offense tonight? Keep in mind, a year ago, they played FCS opponent Missouri State. And if you'll recall, at halftime, it was a close game. I mean, the Jayhawks led by a touchdown at halftime against Missouri State. And, you know, eventually KU pulled away and won by quite a bit. But it was a little bit cozier than I think the fans wanted it to be, and probably Lance Leipold, too, at halftime the last time they played an FCS opponent. That is forgotten about a lot because of the way that the season went for the Jayhawks and how, you know, things were really pretty good for them. But the biggest thing about that game last year against Missouri State is that they did not have Jalen Daniels. Jalen Daniels did not play in the opener against Missouri State. And so knowing that Daniels, by all accounts, is a full go, and they're going to let him loose against Lindenwood tonight, I don't have any doubt in my mind that he's going to run wild, because if that's not the game plan to get him ready to roll for more tougher opponents, then why play him at all in this game? He didn't play last year against the last FCS opponent.
I agree. I think fundamentally, and the other thing is, too, you want to see how he and Grimes fit together, Grimes' new offensive coordinator that came over from Baylor, Jeff Grimes. I agree. Like, that's what I mean. Like, in a normal circumstance, you might let up, but I don't know that I want that today. Tonight, you know, you want to see Daniels and Grimes and how they mesh. You want to give them an opportunity to make their way through a whole game. Sorry, Lindenwood. It could get ugly, but the KU needs to do these things, not just because Grimes and the offense need the reps, right? They don't get preseason games. But because Jalen Daniels needs the reps too.
And I'm going to tell you right now that, you know, if Jalen Daniels comes out swinging and the Kansas offense flexes a little bit in the first half, I don't know if I would expect to see him necessarily in the second half. But what that shouldn't mean is just by default that there's something wrong with him. I just think that if they get out to a large lead and he doesn't go out there for maybe the fourth quarter, maybe at some point in the third quarter, I don't think that everybody should just jump to conclusions that, Jalen Daniels, something's going on. Absolutely. Because that's what happened every single time last year for good reason. Yeah. But I think this is a completely different kind of situation. Is.
Yeah. If he leaves the game and winces off the field, that's one thing. If he just, but that's the question to me. Is that even the right way to go? Or do you just let him go? And it is as much of, there's a new offensive coordinator there that, you know, that nobody has played for yet. And he's not like somebody getting a promotion, Tommy. This is an entirely new individual that came from a totally different place. What does that look like? I won't mind at all if you see this be essentially a preseason game where the starters play all the way through. I think those reps can be valuable. And, you know, and you do have to get ready. It's Illinois week two. And I don't know. I don't know much about Illinois. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't. I'll lean on our insiders and the people that dig in and Leipold and the coaches and what they say. But I know they're a Big Ten football team. And I know that, you know, they'll be dangerous. And they have had good teams in the past. And so I would like to see KU not let off the gas at all in this game. Maybe in the fourth quarter. But I just want all the reps. I want all the reps for Daniels as he comes back from a serious injury. I want all the reps for Grimes as he's trying to work his way into an entirely new offense. I want all the reps for these lines to, you know, because the reality, I think, Tommy, is like if the lines are really good at KU this year, like if the offensive and defensive lines are good, then that, you know, like let's call them like top of the Big 12 good. If that happens, the ceiling for KU is a Big 12 championship. And it's not just the ceiling, because that's the ceiling now, but it almost becomes the expectation needs to be contending there. Their skill guys across the board, if Jalen Daniels is healthy, who's got better skill guys in the Big 12 than KU, right? Their secondary has been one of the better secondaries for a long time, expected to be and will be. If those lines are really good, then KU's expectations alongside their schedule ought to be playing in a Big 12 championship game. Not it shifts from a maybe we could to we probably should, right? Like that's the big, and I think that's why Sharice yesterday pointed to the lines. Outside of that and Jalen Daniels' health, there's not really a ton of questions with this team.
There is. I don't think that from a, and you mentioned the skill position players, there aren't a ton of, I think, overwhelming questions about the skill positions that much. I mean, I know that from a running back perspective, they're loaded. I don't have a lot of doubts about the wide receiver room when you've got Lawrence Arnold and Luke Grimm and Quentin Skinner all returning. Jared Casey, you know, is back this year. That there have been a couple of players that they've had to replace, but more specifically on the line. And that's really going to be, and I know that you said that Sharice, you know, yesterday really made that his priority to watch in this game tonight, is the way that especially the offensive line develops, and the defensive line too. And it's probably, I think, one thing that I want to caution folks tonight, when you're playing an opponent like Lindenwood, it's not only just like what they're going to show from a playbook perspective, but it's also more than likely, let's be real, the offensive and defensive lines for KU more than likely will outclass Lindenwood's lines. And so I wouldn't get too over the top about how well those offensive and defensive lines play tonight, because the level of competition is going to be stepped up pretty quickly, and both lines are still in a little bit of a rebuilding phase right now. I think that, you know, they have the opportunity to grow, and
but they won't be tested tonight.
So, yeah. You know, before everybody like goes crazy celebrating the line play tonight, just remember who they're playing against.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I think it's very fair. But you just, that's what I mean. Again, if that's the, you'd like to see them get all the reps together, right? I mean, they like skill wise, you've got your backfield settled. The only question is Jalen Daniels' health, and which we're hopeful on right now. Like it is the lines. I just these kind of games, I don't want to say they annoy me, but they kind of annoy me. Like I don't, because it's equitable to a preseason game. And it's not the same thing as Florida State playing Georgia Tech, right? Like it's not that. So where you've got two high quality, like they should beat, what's the line? 45.5. They should beat Lindenwood by 45.5, because Lindenwood shouldn't score any points on them, quite frankly. Outside of something fluky, you should cover that spread, because Lindenwood, you would hope, if you're KU, would not be able to do anything offensively. I'm excited about the game, I'll be honest, but it's because of Jalen Daniels. Like that's, for me, that's about it. I know the lines are important. We just talked about that. I just want to see Jalen Daniels play. I just want to see him be healthy. I just want to see him do the things that he has done in, you know, 2 years ago now that make us think he's a Heisman candidate. I just can't wait to see him play football again. Last year sucked in that regard. It's a great year for KU, but that part of the year sucked. Like it was tough to go through those questions every week, to wonder what was going on, to all the other distraction type bogus stuff anyway. I'm just excited that he can get out there and play football, because he's one of the most exciting football players in the country.
He is. And that's why, you know, even though he's dealt with significant injuries the last two seasons, you know, he still is on preseason watch lists for the Heisman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so
he's a top 10 Heisman candidate.
He absolutely is. And I think that there are players out there that probably have, you know, the hype and that sort of thing. But if they go down with an injury and they come back, it's not like they're reinserted at the same kind of stature that Jalen Daniels is, because I think people know his ceiling and they know that, you know, he can be a game breaking type talent and a high impact player. And that's what the Jayhawks are going to need. Can Kansas, let's just say worst case scenario, and Daniels does not make it through this season. I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know. And they have to go to one of the backups. Can they have the same kind of season they had a year ago? Yeah, I think they can, because they've got a lot of the same talent that they're returning. They return a lot of players this year, but that's not the expectation level for the Jayhawks. The expectation level for the Jayhawks this year is to win the Big 12 and to be in the 12-team CFP. And I think to do that, you are going to have Jalen Daniels.
They feel good, according to Sirius, about Isaiah Marshall, the freshman, and of course, Cole Ballard. I think we're all optimistic about in what he's been able to do and could develop into. It's unfair, because the reality is, when this all started, when this turnaround started, right, we all sort of looked at it and was like, this is because of Jalen Daniels, right? I think that's a fair statement. We all watched him play and we're like, man, this Heisman kid is the reason KU's great. Then he got hurt. And then they were still good. And then last year was like, all right, this is the year Jalen Daniels is going to take them and as far as they'll go. And then he gets hurt early and he didn't play anymore. And guess what? They're still really good. So I think it's just taken a long time for us to, because of how bad it had been at Kansas, to realize it's not just Jalen Daniels. Like, they're really good all around. He is just so good. And it's been such a weird path that we continue to focus on that, as I do too. Because you think of what the sky's the limit when he's there. But it's still fine if he's not. They have been prepared, and we've seen that. They don't have Jason Bean anymore. That is a factor. But they have a couple of guys, I think, that can get them, with the talent they have spread across the board, to get there. That game tonight against Lindenwood, 7 o'clock. It is a 45.5-point spread. Have fun with that. 60.5 over under. Probably like the under 60.5 more, but again, like, it's hard to,
I like to lay the points for KU, and
to lay the points, but it's because, like, in normal circumstances in these kinds of games, I would take the under, but KU may not let off ever at all, and I think that's probably the right decision based on what all the things we just talked about. But we'll be back to review it tomorrow. It will not be a game that we pick in our pick'em contest tomorrow, because it will be played tonight. And quite frankly, I'm pretty happy about that. 45-point spreads scare me a little bit. 869-1240, what do you think, KU fans? We're going to switch, talk a little K-State, get you ready for Saturday's game for the Cats. Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, joins us when we come back. It's Sports Daily rolling into hour number two. Don't go away.
In Odyssey Sports Station, this is 97.5 and 1240 KFH, KNSS HD2 Clearwater, Wichita's most...
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Listen to Sports Radio. Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
He's got all the insight of what you want to know and maybe some of what you don't want to know. Here's K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald.
And we are excited to be back into football season, back into the swing of things. Tim Fitzgerald joins us to kick off hour number two here on a Thursday of Sports Daily. Tim Fitzgerald and gang, if you're watching on our video stream, you can see the pups have made an appearance. Always appreciate them stopping by. They usually have something to say in the background. For Fitz as we get ready. GoPowerCat.com, getting you ready. That's where you find Fitz's work, at Life of Fitz on social media. How does it feel, Tim? Like, we're here. This season we've been talking about all summer long is here. In a couple of days, K-State will take the field for the first time behind Avery Johnson, a new offensive coordinator, a few new wrinkles, and expectations as high as they've ever been.
Yeah, I'm glad it's game week. I'm glad most of my pregame talking is over. We released our PowerCat pregame podcast last night at midnight, or this morning at midnight. So I have one more story to write, boys, and then I'm ready for the game. I'm so tired of talking about it. I'm so tired of writing about it. I'm so tired of tired. I'm really tired. But the game's Saturday night, and I'm fired up.
Fitz, we just talked in our last segment about the KU-Lindenwood matchup tonight. And Lindenwood is an FCS team, and so is UT Martin, but they're completely different kinds of FCS teams. And UT Martin, they were a top 25 team in FCS last year. So while it's still a completely different level of college football, this is a Skyhawks team that has won games at their level before. What do you expect from them this weekend?
They'll be competitive as best they can. I also expect them, and this is just a theory, that if it gets out of hand, they too will clear their benches and try to get some guys experience, because they play SEMO next week, and SEMO is their rival. And they've always played them at the end of the season, but this year it's week two, which is odd. It's also on the road for the Skyhawks. So I think they'll stay in it as long as they can. They'll keep playing their dudes. But I think once it gets out of hand, it'll really get out of hand, because they, too, will lighten their benches and get everyone in, just like K-State will. But it could also be a really competitive game, because, as you said, this is a team that knows how to win. This is a team that has been productive at the FCS level, although, according to the polls, there might be a drop-off this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it hard, is sometimes you go into reputations with these programs, but if we're all being honest, like, we don't know anything about their players. Yeah. It's hard enough to keep up with the players that move around in the Big 12, let alone at FCS schools that play in these types of games. I mean, Vegas sees it as 37 points. Of these types of games, that's not a massive margin. I mean, it fits, and, you know, I kind of like K-State on the number. I don't know what the hell to do with those kinds of numbers, but it really kind of, you mentioned UT Martin may pull their guys, which is interesting. At what point, or do K-State pull guys, or, and we just had this same discussion with KU, it's sort of a similar situation, new offensive coordinator, new quarterback, lines that need to show you something on both sides. It's sort of a very similar path for K-State. Yeah. Do you pull them, or do you want the reps there for all the new components of the offense?
Jacob, it's a great point. It really is. You know, normally, as a coach, you want to pull players and put other guys in to get them experience, but also, let's be blunt, to not try to completely humiliate an opponent. And I think that's kind of out the window in a way with the new playoff. You got to show. You got to run it up. And it's a sad reality of what the Big 12 is facing. I think this is a problem that the Big 12 and ACC faces. If you're going to win by as many points as possible. But that Kansas State also has a lot of young players that they're going to be counting on next week at Tulane, the week after with Arizona, the week after going to BYU and Oklahoma State, then coming in. So you need to get them experience, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Those second stringers are so, so important and promising. They love these young players. They just need to get on the field some more. So we'll see how they balance that with settling into what they have and what they need to get ready and getting some other guys ready.
Fitz, there is so much depth defensively for the Wildcats, and we know, you know, the big names, the guys that are set to make a large impact this season for Joe Klanderman's defense. But there are also a handful of players that, you know, depending on how things shake out, I'm not sure that we fully yet know who first string is going to be, who second string is going to be, like that sort of thing. So in a game like, you know, what they're facing this weekend against UT Martin, do you think we'll have some, you know, more places solidified with some of these defenders after the game? Or do you think even going into Tulane, there still might be question marks about exactly who's going to fill what role defensively?
Yeah, you're right, Tommy. I think there will be some questions even after this game, because, again, with all respect to UT Martin, it's not a full measuring stick here. You might get a bit better with that against Tulane, but certainly by the time you get Arizona in, you're going to find out who can stand up to Big 12 type of personnel. And, you know, that's really the question. You can be a star in this game because you might be a star at the FCS level, but are you going to be a star at the Big 12 FBS level? That's the question. But they need to start getting some of these guys on the field so we see how they respond to game situations, particularly these young defensive ends that they're raving about. Let's see who turns it up in the game and makes some plays.
Connor Riley, Matt Wells, they have had now their full offseason. How is that going? What roles on game day? Are we absolutely definitive on which of the two is going to call the plays, on how that works and looks? We know they're co-offensive coordinators. Do you think the offense overall looks like it did with Colin Klein, or is it something totally different?
That I don't know. That's going to be interesting. I know that bringing in Matt Wells, they've layered in some of his elements of his passing game, which I think will work with Avery Johnson exceptionally well. A lot of play action, a lot of short passes that put athletes into space, and a lot of read option where Avery can decide if he's running or throwing or handing it off. So I think we'll see more of that than we have in the past. And there's the dogs. And it's going to be interesting to see how that all unveils itself. But I think the offense is going to look quite a bit like what we saw in the bowl game. They're going to be really reserved in this. They're not going to put Avery in peril. They're going to ask him to, you know, run out of bounds and throw it away unless it gets really competitive. And as we saw in the bowl game, once they needed a touchdown, they cracked open that playbook a little bit and got it done. I think that's what we'll see. They don't want him to get off to a bad start or get injured in a game such as this. So I think they'll be cautious. But Connor Riley will be in the box calling the plays with input from Matt Wells, who will be down on the field. So we'll see how this all works out.
We've spent a lot of time, Fitz, during the offseason talking about the wide receiver room at K-State and how that will all shake out as this season progresses. I think, you know, the one wide receiver, I'm excited to see all of them, to be honest with you, but I think the one I'm most excited to see is how Jace Brown performs, not only this weekend, but throughout the entire season. It's been a kind of a small sample size with him and Avery Johnson, but in the Pop-Tarts Bowl last year, they showed quite a bit of chemistry, and Brown had a great bowl game for the Wildcats. And I would anticipate that that's going to be a connection that we see continue to grow and evolve this season.
Yeah, when those two arrived in the same recruiting class, they were roommates, and they threw the ball around a lot, and it showed up. I mean, you could see that chemistry. I think you'll have that with Dylan Edwards now, too, because they've fallen into that same kind of sequence. Jace Brown just showed the very tip of his potential. And I don't know what his complete role will be on this team, but he's going to see a lot of action. He's an incredibly reliable receiver for Avery Johnson. He's a great fit in this offense. But with a healthy Keegan Johnson and some other weapons at receiver coming on, this is a really deep receiver room for the first time at K-State in a very long time, well before Chris Klieman arrived. So he's going to have some people to compete with and get in the ball, but he's going to play a big role.
Well, look, it's deep. I will concede that. But is it talented? Mm-hmm. Because they lost Brooks and Sinnott to the NFL. And
right.
I think, you know, if you're asking people like who were those were the guys, they're both gone. So maybe it's deep, but is it good enough? I guess would be my question to that.
You know, Phillip Brooks was a warrior through his 12 years at Kansas State. He just really delivered a lot of big plays. But I think we're going to see some guys come on now and fill that role, including Dylan Edwards. And I think they'll be just fine. Tight end with Ben Sinnott, it's a different story. They've got three guys they love there, but put together, can they do everything Ben Sinnott did? It's incredible in hindsight what he did. He was a fullback. He'd split out as a wide receiver. And, oh, yeah, he played tight end and blocked really well.
Right.
So just catching the ball. So they're gonna, that tight end is going to be an interesting rotation to follow. But I think at receiver, we got a guy like Trey Spivey who ended up redshirting last year, who's incredibly promising. And Dante Cephas comes in as a transfer, maybe a little bit behind on the playbook. And Jaden Jackson continues to kind of lurk back there after having a big game in the opener last year. Now will he kind of follow up with a bigger season?
You know, it's interesting, Fitz, going back to last season, the losses that the Wildcats suffered a year ago were all extremely close. In fact, I think what the largest margin of defeat that they had was 8 points that game in Stillwater against Oklahoma State. Other than that, it was all closer, you know, than that. So, you know, in a lot of cases, that can mean one or two things going a different way for Kansas State, and it could have been a completely different result and outcome. And you can't always game plan for some of those things, but going into this season, do you notice or do you think of something that they need to do better this season to try to avoid that same fate this year?
I think this offense will have more of an ability to be explosive. you know, Will Howard, for all the good stuff he did, was kind of more of a game manager than a playmaker. You know, his first year, he's handing it to Deuce, getting the ball to Deuce. And last year, maybe they just didn't have the weapons, to be real honest. And they leaned on DJ Giddens a lot, and receiver was kind of questionable because Keegan Johnson was banged up. But with Avery back there, healthy receivers, you know, Dylan Edwards adding into the mix of things, I think they'll just be more explosive. They'll get more long touchdowns, which then, you know, oddly turns around and puts pressure on your defense because now they got to go back on the field. So, you know, at times the defense benefits from that ball control offense. So this is going to maybe be a little bit different brand of K-State football than we've seen in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, it for sure is. It just, like, Will Howard is going to help Ohio State win a lot of games. I agree with you on that. I just think it's very, I don't know, very different than what we're looking at. I want to go to Avery and get a prediction from you. I'm trying to look here at last year's game against NC State. I want to give you an over-under on pass attempts for Avery Johnson. And I think I'm going to put it as low, over under 15 pass attempts for Avery Johnson in this game.
Yeah, I'm going to go not over on that because I think we're going to see shorter passes in this offense that are essentially elongated handoffs. You know, the little shovel pass with the receiver in motion. I've seen them practice that. I think that'll be on the field. I think they're going to run a lot of screens, whether they're, you know, behind the line of scrimmage or, you know, just something, a little bubble screen a little bit down the field. I'm not sure how they'll manifest itself, but I think they're going to have a little more control in this passing game and then take those hits deeper. So I think he'll go over 15.
31 was the number against NC State. I guess it becomes a bigger question of how much does he play.
Yeah, that's true. That's very
but
true.
He's got to complete a lot of the passes, right? I mean, that's the thing. If you look at that performance, yeah, it was right at or just under a 50% completion percentage. Like that accuracy, we can say, you know, he's far more explosive than Will Howard and all these things, but he's got to be able to. We know he's got a cannon.
Yeah.
But have you seen anything there on that in this offseason? And, you know, can he be a 65% completion guy?
Oh, yeah, he can. Again, his command in the bowl game was don't take these chances. You know, there'll be a time for that. Just I would love to go have someone go back because I'm not going to do it and look at that bowl game and see how many throwaways he had.
Just, yeah, right.
I'm chucking it out of bounds.
It was a lot.
It's what the coaches want, so I'm going to do it. And you know what? Avery's a really smart player, and maybe he knew – when and where to take those chances. And at that point in the game, it wasn't. But I think he'll get up there again. I feel like he's going to have more options as receivers and more playmakers. So maybe more guys will be available downfield.
All right, Fitz. Well, what do you guys have to go, Power Cat? I know you said you've got one more to write. There's all kinds of coverage there, but what can folks get ready with?
Man, we got so much going on right now, Go Power Cat. By the way, we're 75% off as a celebration to kick off. Thanks for reminding me. I need to get that on the website. We've got the PowerCat pregame podcast. It's up, my daily delivery, lots of coverage from the boys, written content, VIP free. I think we've got 7 content items slated today alone. And if you're a Big 12 fan or a fan of another school in the Big 12, our Big 12 Insiders channel just released its first ever Big 12 Game Day edition with a panel of Big 12 publishers from the 24/7 network talking about all the games in the conference. I think it's a pretty cool thing. And all that's available at Go Power Cat.
Let's see if KU can get this magic season started right tonight. K-State will take its chance Saturday. Fitz, we appreciate it. You can follow him on social media at Life of Fitz, gopowercat.com. Let's do it again next week.
You bet. Thanks to all that are playing on Thursday night for my joy.
Thanks for falling on that sword for us. Yeah. All right, Fitz.
Thanks, boys.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. If you missed any of that, you can listen to it always for free on the Odyssey app. We podcast the show out there every single day. You can also go back and watch on our video streams, YouTube, X, Facebook, and of course on 12 News Connected. We'll come back. We'll begin to dig into this Astros series for the Kansas City Royals. When we return, don't go away. It's all Brockton Caster at Sports Daily on a football game day Thursday. How does that sound?
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Glad to be here with you on Sports Daily. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Caster. We are getting you ready for a football day, a big day on the Major League Baseball schedule as we get the Royals opening up a series down in Houston. Brady Singer takes the mound against Hunter Brown. Pitching wise, there have been a lot of times, Tommy, throughout this season where we've gone through and looked at the pitching matchups and been like, okay, let's evaluate this from the starters. I don't know that we're at that point anymore with the current state of the Royals rotation with a couple injuries. At the moment, Cole Reagans appears to be on the docket to start that third game. We assume that will be the case. So then it would go Singer, Lugo, Reagans, Marsh, because Lorenzen is now on the IL. I guess it's, for me, it's kind of, I'll believe it when I see it a little bit. Because I just don't know if he's going to be ready to bounce back that quick, but does it even really matter?
Well, I do think that it is important to note historically the way that the Royals have approached injuries. And I know we talked to Mike Gillespie on Tuesday about this specifically with Reagans, that if it's something serious, usually the Royals don't come out and say anything at all. Matt Cotura was fairly definitive that Reagans was fine. And usually when that happens, that means that the player is typically fine. So I'm not at that point where I'm like, oh, I'll see it. I got to see it to believe it that Reagans is okay. Until he gets scratched from the start, I'm anticipating him being out there and hopefully him being effective and bouncing back from what's been a sort of rough stretch for Reagans as of late. So that's kind of the way that I'm approaching this. As far as the game tonight is concerned, Brady Singer had a really bad outing his last time out against the Phillies. That was one of the games that the Phillies blew the Royals out last weekend. But the last time Brady Singer faced the Astros was early in the season, and it was a resounding victory for the Royals, and they just beat up on Houston. The opposing pitcher tonight for the Astros was the same opposing pitcher in that game at Kauffman earlier this season. It was Hunter Brown, and Brown gave up a ton of runs to Kansas City. All in all, I do like this matchup tonight, and we've seen it before this season, and the Royals came out on top pretty definitively.
Yeah, Singer is impossible for me to guess at which one we're going to get. I don't know, because his style in the Astros are favored tonight, but it's odd with Singer because Singer's kind of going to do what he does, and it would be a little strange. I would think the Astros are a team that would typically, and they didn't in that meeting earlier this year, be good against Singer because they can hit the ball out of the yard. The other team's going to put the ball in play when Singer's on the mound. So we'll see. We look at this, it's a 4-game set. Same as Cleveland. Good with the split here. I think I'm probably good with the split, considering the state of the rotation.
Yeah.
Maybe even more so, I'd be good with the split considering the uncertainty in the rotation right now.
Yeah, I think that is probably a fair expectation going into this weekend. I think in my mind, it has less to do with the opponent. And I know that the Astros have been hot and cold, and they're not particularly hot right now. At one point, they were the hottest team in Major League Baseball, and they've cooled off, pretty significantly since that time. It's not about that. It's not even about the fact that the games are in Houston. It's the fact that this is an extremely grueling stretch of baseball for Kansas City, and more so from the fact that they've already played 4 straight games this week, 4 in 3 days, And they're continuing this road trip. They flew from Cleveland to Houston, immediately following the day game yesterday. And they don't get another break for a week. And so it's an already tired bullpen. It's a rotation that has dealt with some injuries and issues over the last few days. And I think that that could potentially also extend, to the lineup as well with a little bit of fatigue. So knowing all of that and bringing all of that together, yeah, I think I would feel pretty good about getting out of Houston with a split this weekend.
I hope for a split. The good news is, though, they have some cushion, right? And this is what you like to see as much as anything about Cleveland. They do sit now still a game behind Cleveland with the loss yesterday. But when you look at the wild card, the cushion we've been talking about exists at the moment, right? You're 2.5 clear of Minnesota. You're 3 clear of Boston, who's won a couple of row. And Detroit just decided they're not going to lose any more baseball games, apparently. As they've climbed back into the mix, as has Seattle. So, where it looked like for just a minute there, it might space out and there weren't as many teams. It looks like now that's changing again. And Detroit is very much in the mix. Tampa's staying in the mix. So there's a lot of teams that are still behind you. So, the avoiding landmine part of this portion of the schedule is still important for the Royals, but it is very nice to see a little cushion. Houston is a head-to-head, factor in these outcomes too, because Houston right now leads the West, but they could very much get past in the West, and then they're a wild card team you're contending with. So that exists, not to the same degree certainly as it did against Cleveland or will against Minnesota, but very much when we look at the playoffs overall, Tommy, this is a team that they could be competing with head to head for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I think that is important to keep in mind, because although the Astros have kind of declined a little bit as of late, they haven't played their best baseball, they're still in a position to be a playoff team, no doubt about it, whether they win the division or they get one of the wild card spots. I think that it's fair to say that with the talent on their roster that they've underachieved, I would say, the entire course of this season, outside of a couple of stretches where they've been really, really hot. It's unlike what we're used to seeing from the Astros over the last, decade or so of when they've been pretty consistently good over the years. And so it's a little bit uncommon, I think, to see the Astros in this sort of hot and cold situation that they're in. The danger in that is that even though they're more cold than hot right this second, they do have the talent in their roster to flip that switch pretty quickly. And so the Royals need to be on guard for that this weekend. You can't go into this series and let your guard down. One thing about Hunter Brown, by the way, is that, he's faced the Royals twice. And I mentioned that the outing back in April, his ERA overall taking on the Royals in the two starts that he's had against Kansas City, he's got an ERA approaching 37. So it's not been a good couple of outings that Hunter Brown has had against Kansas City. You better believe that the lineup has taken note of that. Like, hey, we can hit this guy. We did it a few months ago at Kauffman. We can do it again tonight, and we can start this 4-game stretch off with a bang. But one thing to keep in mind, when we've talked a lot about the rotation's fatigue issues and injury issues, Brady Singer has not been good at all in his last 4 turns through the rotation. I think we can call a spade here.
Yeah.
He's had an ERA over 6 over his last 4 starts. His, opposing OPS, the batters he's faced in those 4 starts, is approaching 900. So, he's got to find a way to get that turned around. And I think that it can absolutely start tonight when you're taking on, an Astros team that has a significant amount of talent, but also is a little bit cooled off right now. That's an opportunity, I think, for Brady Singer to kind of flip that script.
It is. And I don't, he's tricky for me, Tommy.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at MyBob's.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Always, always has been. Because he kind of is him no matter what, right? Like, I don't know. I guess when I watch Singer pitch, I don't see a lot of difference in what you see game to game. It looks the same. It feels the same. But the outcome can be way different. Whereas some pitchers, like, you can look at them and be like, oh, they have their stuff today. You know what I mean? I've always thought that about Singer. Like, he gets – I love watching him pitch because he's going to get up there. He's going to move quick. He's going to do his thing. He's doing all of those things. And then it's more on what the opponent does with it. I know it's more complicated than that, obviously. He just doesn't – it's just not quite the same when we watch it happen. And you're right. It's been very bad lately. And they kind of need him to step up now. But he does. And he had a good start against Cincinnati, by the way. He had a six-inning, no runs allowed start. But that was the only one that hasn't been at least three runs.
Yeah, over now, the entire last four starts combined – yeah, that ERA is pretty high.
Yeah, so that should alarm you even more.
Yeah.
You got to consider he went six innings of scoreless baseball against Cincinnati. But I will say this. He's gone less than five innings zero times in his last seven starts. Okay, so he's going to battle for you. He may give up four, five, six runs, but he's going to battle for you. He'll get you through the fifth inning. And oftentimes he'll get you deeper into the game, even when he might be giving up some runs. If I'm looking at the starting rotation, Singer's not the one I'm worried about. I'll put it that way. Not that that means I think he's going to come down and shut down the opposition every time. I think he's just going to continue to be what he is all year, which is when he's on, he is the other team really struggles, and when he's off, it can get out of hand in a hurry. There's not much in between. He's not the one I'm worried about. I'm worried about Lugo running out of gas. I'm worried about Reagan's running out of gas. I'm worried to a lesser degree about Waka, for sure. He's the one I'm least worried about Singer. I'm actually least worried about Waka. But Singer's not the one I'm concerned about. We'll put it that way. It's Reagan's, it's Lugo, and it's now Marsh to some degree, although I think Marsh will battle for them. Those are the guys I think that have been more obvious in their, you know, their fatigue. I don't know that I'd say Singer seems fatigued as much to me as those others.
Yeah, I don't think the fatigue factor really plays into it a whole lot for Singer, because I take a look at the main other guys in that rotation, probably what outside of Reagan's. Lugo is older. Waka is older. Lorenzen is older. Singer's not. And so I don't think it's been really a fatigue factor necessarily for Brady Singer. I think you want to protect against that because, you know, you want to have Singer fresh and good to go when you're approaching the playoffs. But that's not a major concern for me. It's just the consistency. I don't fault fatigue for that. I just fault sometimes he goes out and he's really right. Solid. And other
totally
times he's
agree.
Not.
Yep. I totally agree. I don't think it's fatigue. Like, yeah, when we watch Lugo pitch and he struggles, you're like, he looks gassed, right? He just doesn't look like he did. Reagan's, it's been less of a concern, but I think we maybe are starting to see it a little bit. And we'll see Lorenzen's hurt. It sucks because Lorenzen got hurt not pitching, right? Covering the bag. We're spinning in circles here with Singer because it is the overall feel for the team. You need the offense to step up. You need the bullpen to be better. And it is a dangerous, dangerous series against Houston, who has the capability when they're on of being the best team in baseball, flat period. If they're going right, if they're on that sort of groove, they are probably the best team in baseball. So hopefully the Royals can contend and do what they did in Cleveland and have that swag and you know, get to them early and do all of those things and get a little more help from the starting rotation than they did against Cleveland in that series. All right. So we have our giveaway set up for Cody Jinks. Let's set up our other giveaway here. It's for HTO, iced tea and free rain coffee. We'll get you a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from, and a free rain coffee, which is coming iced or hot. There are two new options for you, mocha butter pecan or dirty chai apple crisp. Those come iced or hot. You can get your hands on one of those. Try it out. All you got to do is text the keyword tea, T-E-A, to the short code 20357. That's T to 20357. Good luck, everybody. Good luck on the Cody Jinks giveaway. We're going to come back. We'll take you around some of the other headlines. You know another team that starts tonight? Colorado. It's like the trendiest upset pick going. What do we... I'm so lost on Colorado. We'll talk about that and some other headlines around the sports world when we return on Sports Daily. Welcome back, everybody. Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster alongside you. Glad to be here with you on this Thursday. KU plays tonight, 7 o'clock. The Royals, by the way, Bryce emailed, and appreciate the catch, Bryce. The Royals are 5.5 clear of Boston. They are 2 clear of Minnesota, who is 3.5 clear of Boston. They are 5.5 clear of that wild card spot. All right, Tommy. Look, Colorado plays tonight. I'm kind of glad they get the spotlight somewhat to themselves, at least nationally. There are some decent games on tonight, but this is the one that is being the most talked about, which shouldn't surprise us. It would have probably been in year 2 under Prime anyway. It certainly has been because, A, the opponent is good, and B, Prime cannot keep out of the headlines bickering with media constantly, whether it's national media, local media. Not sure he knows what the difference is sometimes. The range of outcomes here for Colorado at the beginning of the offseason felt large. It feels even larger now, right? Because I think for me, the floor is looking like it could be a whole lot lower than I once thought. You know, I thought they had a moderately high floor because I think they're very talented, but it's just been weird in Boulder this season. Weird, weird, weird. And I don't, like, has there been anything positive? Has there been any positive vibe at all coming out of that program this offseason?
Yeah, not that I can think of. I think that really going into year number two, year one was full of hype. And probably deservedly so. And the way that the season got started for them, it was the biggest thing going on in college football before they really fell off a cliff and lost 8 of their last 9. The hype was there. This year, they need to have the results on the field do the talking. But I suspect that that's not going to happen. I suspect that there's going to continue to be the hype, but it's going to primarily be self-inflicted. It's going to be Dion, you know, trying to keep that hype going and keep Colorado at the top of the news cycle week in and week out. The issue with that is that you're in a position now in year number two where you have to let the results on the field do the talking. You have to. Every program is that way. And I suspect that that's going to be, you know, ultimately probably the downfall of Dion's era at Colorado, is just a lot of overpromising and a lot of under-delivering.
Well, look, the expectation from where Colorado was last year to me definitively was a good year for them, positive year. In reality, when you take where Colorado was essentially where Kansas was, right? Like, they're just one of the worst Power 5 schools, now Power 4. And they came back and they won a handful of games. And yeah, they lost all those games down the stretch, but they were in a lot of them, right? They were competitive. It was different. Normally, the coach, after that year, if they come in the next year, win 5-6 games and are competitive, you'd feel like, yep, that's growth. That's the right direction. But I don't know that Prime is going to allow that to be reality there. And it's not that the funny thing about it is, like, I don't think that the pressure is coming externally. Like, I don't think it's coming from his bosses at Colorado.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think it's coming from fans.
It's self-inflicted.
At all.
It's self-inflicted.
Yeah, that's what's so weird. Like, is there a Colorado fan on the planet that doesn't think Prime is the right guy for the job and has made this program better? Because I would be stunned if there is. It's all coming from, like, insecurities from Deion Sanders. And it's so strange to see somebody who is so confident, right, with so much swag, all the things we love about, all the things I love about Prime. I loved that story last year, but it's just reeking of insecurity right now. And I don't know why that is. And that's the red flag for me where I'm like, God, maybe they're just not any good. Like, what is happening there? Because they have maybe the number one overall pick in the NFL. They have a Heisman candidate somewhere else on the field that's an incredible two-way player. They've brought in, and they have lost some of it, and that's where this all started, but they brought in a tremendous amount more talent than they had a year ago. Yet, you would think, without even playing a game, that they're 0-6 by the tone of things in the program.
Yeah, it's really shifted, and I think that from what I've been able to gather from all of this is that there have been media members, and in a lot of cases, local media members or, you know, from that area, Denver probably included, that have been critical, but I don't think that they've been necessarily unfair. I think that it's a situation where there are some, and I've read some of these columns, it's almost kind of like they're equating Prime and Colorado to the emperor having no clothes, you know, where there's just a lot of talk and a lot of hype and the brashness and the guarantees and the swag and all of that. And then when you actually pull back the curtain, there's just not a whole lot there outside of a really, like, a couple of really, really talented individual players. But as a whole, there just really isn't a whole lot there. That's, I think, been kind of what has the way that it's been summed up. And Deion has taken that absolutely personally. But here's the thing. I can tell that this is surprising to you. This is not surprising to me ever. And I like Prime. Prime has done some really, really amazing things both on the field and off the field. He was a great broadcaster for a number of years because of his charisma and all of that. He was a phenomenal two-sport player. But man, I can remember when I was a kid, because I grew up an Atlanta Braves fan, Deion Sanders playing for the Braves, and he got into an altercation with Tim McCarver because Tim McCarver was critical of him, and it resulted in Sanders dumping, I think, a bucket of water over Tim McCarver's head in the locker room. That was back in the early 90s. And that's only one example of several different examples over the time that Prime has been in the spotlight where he has really reacted poorly to any kind of criticism. That insecurity has been there forever. And I think that what ends up happening is that he tries to overcompensate for those insecurities, but they really come to light whenever anybody's critical.
I think the overreaction, I agree with that. It's a good point. I think the overreaction is different. He had critics last year. He had critics when he took the job, and it was a different tone, right? Like, okay. Like,
but the hype outweighed the criticism. And I think that's not really what's happening now.
Not before they played a game, it didn't. Before they played a game, it didn't. And he was just kind of like, watch us. Remember the speech he gave to the players, basically tell them to pack their suitcases and get out? Like, there was a ton of criticism before they played a game. And then they played a game, and it was like, oh, wow, they're way better than we thought they'd be. And then they had the crazy start, and that's when the real fun started. But he handled it like, I'm going to prove it to you. Now it's nothing but defensive tones for me. Like, oh, we're not talking to you anymore. Like, you had something negative to say. Like, if you can't get on board, like, I hate that. Not just from him, from anybody. And anybody in those sorts of positions where your livelihood is essentially based on your program's exposure and people talking about it. And that comes both from the lovers and the haters and everybody. I don't mind putting a chip on your shoulder, but don't be a baby about it. Like, that's what Like, just don't be a baby, you know, because that stuff seems like it's going to I can't find a scenario where I don't see that bleeding onto the field. And so as I'm trying to guess at what Colorado might be and was so hopeful at this great story. And look, it's still going to be a lot of attention on the Big 12, and the Big 12 will gain from it still in a different way, perhaps. But while it was like, okay, like I know their top end talent is really, really good. How many games can they win? Last year, it felt like they were going to do nothing but overachieve every time they took the field. And for the most part, they did, quite frankly, based on what they were the year before. Now, when you hear all this every single day from the head coach, it's nothing but excuses and whining and bickering. How does that not bleed into the locker room and then onto the field? Which brings us to tonight against North Dakota State, when a program that is, you know, equivalent to any powerhouse you can imagine at the FBS level, who will have their affairs in order, who will have their ducks in a row, who likely will not make a ton of mistakes. What happens in this game? I haven't seen anybody pick a North Dakota State win. I've seen a whole lot of people pick North Dakota State covering 9.5. I would probably lean the other way, Tommy, just with the still off chance that those talented players come out with that chip on their shoulder. That's the other half of it. Prime is as good a chip on his shoulder, you know, athlete and coach as we've ever seen. But man, as far as overall expectations, I just imagine that uncertainty and that, I don't want to call it chaos because I've never been inside that locker room, but perceived disorder. When you go up against some of the, like when you go up against a Leipold program or a K-State program or a, you know, Iowa State program, it feels like you're asking for trouble there.
We know because of the Chris Klieman connection that North Dakota State historically has been a powerhouse in FCS football. That being said, last year they came off one of their worst seasons that they had in a long time. They were 11-4, and that's one of their worst seasons.
Right.
You know, and I know that they're looking to get back to where, you know, they're used to being at the top of the FCS mountain. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that North Dakota State can give a program that's reeling like Colorado a run for their money. Do I think North Dakota State will win the game? Probably not. You know, but I do understand why it's been a pretty trendy upset pick, and that would just absolutely be just a seismic story if that happened tonight. I'm not anticipating that to happen, but you never know. From a spread perspective, though, I'm not sure I can in good faith bet Colorado to cover that spread. I don't know if I like Colorado to lay the points, because I do think that North Dakota State has shown, you know, time and time again that they are a very capable football program, regardless if they're an FCS.
We'll make the pick. You taking 9 and which way?
I'll take the points. I mean, I'm going to take the points. I think that, okay. I think that North Dakota State will cover.
I'll take the other side. I'll take the other side. I just, what I'm afraid of is this is a flaming disaster for Colorado this year. And I really, 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 really don't want to see that happen. And so I'm going to just hold out hope and hopefully pick that they're living up to their upside and everything's okay. And oh, what a weird offseason it's been. I'm glad for their sake to be able to get to some games.
By the way, this isn't an official pick of our Friday football picks. Right? Okay, yeah. So I'll take the points.
Yeah.
I'll take North Dakota State.
That'll be tomorrow. We'll have that for you. All right, we'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network today. Get some house cleaning done here on Sports Daily. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number
1.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.